Coming up next, another episode of The Kevin O'Connor Show. Welcome back to The Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me today is Tom Haverstraw from YahooSports.com. We got a lot to discuss coming up. Jimmy Butler trade rumors. What's going on there? What teams make most sense that we haven't even heard about yet? And then we get into the NBA Cup, the games we watched so far, the semifinals happening on Saturday. Big previews there. A lot to talk about. Let's bring on Tom. Welcome back to another episode of The Kevin O'Connor Show here with Tom Haverstraw. Tom, we got some big news this week that we have to talk about. Jimmy Butler has been in the news all week. Shams Charania from ESPN reported that the Heat are open to dealing Butler if the trade proposal is right. He said, according to league sources, he mentions that Butler's agent, Bernie Lee, has expressed in league circles that Butler would be open to going to the Mavs, the Rockets, the Warriors, or the Suns. And Bernie Lee has come out and said those reports are fabricated, which we'll talk about later. But first, I want to focus on the situation with those four teams, the Mavericks, the Rockets, the Warriors, and the Suns. My first thought here, Tom, the Mavs make no sense. They can't get there financially. They'd have to trade three or four of their top seven role players. It doesn't make sense. The Suns, yes, they could flip, you know, the Bradley Beal in a deal for Jimmy Butler. He'd have to waive his no trade clause. Maybe there's some stuff that makes sense there. The Heat would have to give up Josh Richardson in the deal as well. Maybe that could work. Rockets, we've had Rafael Stone say on SiriusXM that he does not want to make a trade. A ton of reporters, Windhorst, Kelly Eco, Mark Stein have all reported the same, that Stone does not want to make a big deal this season. Seems like he's going to stick with the youth movement. I believe that to be true, even though there does make some sense for Butler to go to Houston with them really pursuing in both an NBA Cup and they want to make a run in the playoffs. To me, the Warriors of those four teams make by far the most sense for a Jimmy Butler trade, by far, because they're going for it. They're older. They're trying to make the most of this window. Do you agree with me?
100%. We talked about it on The Big Number with Dan Devine that dropped on Thursday. Every Thursday, we do The Big Number. This week, we talked about the Jimmy Butler trade situation, identifying among those teams and a couple others in Memphis and Cleveland. We went kind of through these team destinations and came to the same conclusion: is the Warriors make the most sense of the teams. And I think for the Warriors, after Wednesday night's debacle in the late game situation, you could see Jimmy Butler sliding into that pods role or whomever in that closing lineup and fix a lot of the issues that Golden State had. So I think even after we recorded that podcast, I think the Golden State Warriors make the most sense of those teams. Houston is really whether the Rockets want to, you know, dance. You know, it doesn't seem like from internally, externally, they're not sending the messages that Jimmy Butler, a homecoming back home to Houston, makes a lot of sense for them right now. And you also mentioned, you know, maybe they wait and see this playoff go through. Jalen Green has that poison pill provision, which makes it near impossible to put him in a trade because of the extension that he signed this past offseason. So from the Rockets' perspective, maybe they wait till this offseason to revisit some of these trade talks for a big guy because, A, they'll know how they did in the postseason, which is what OKC did last year, and they got Hartenstein and Alex Caruso. And, B, they can have more ingredients or more options on the trade talks because of those provisions being lifted and the restrictions being a lot looser for them to go deal making. I think the Warriors make the most sense. And I think Wednesday night's game reinforces the need that they need another Steph Curry co-pilot out there to create offense. And I think he fits the brand of basketball defensively. And just, he's 35. The Warriors, their core is wanting to win a championship right now in the same way that Jimmy Butler does want to.
It makes total sense for them. They could give up Andrew Wiggins, who is not the same level player that Jimmy Butler is. Butler is a supersized version of him with the shot creation that he offers, and he offers defense, and he can offer some of the spot up stuff that Wiggins provides. They would have to give up D'Anthony Melton, the deal, who's out for the season. And then some combination of Jonathan Kuminga with Pods or Moody. And then you're there financially. The Heat, the question is, you know, we have the Warriors right now. they don't know what to make of Jonathan Kuminga, who can become a restricted free agent this summer. Would the Heat want Jonathan Kuminga? To me, is the big question in any deal. Mm-hmm. I don't think, despite Butler's age, despite his contract demands, that Kuminga has shown enough so far to be worth what Jimmy Butler can give. To me, if I'm the Heat, I'd rather go into the summer with Jimmy Butler and say, are you sure you really have a market out there? Are you sure you actually want to leave? Or maybe if you're the Heat at that point, more teams pop up. More teams can do sign and trades. There's the opt-in and trade scenario as well. Or maybe he just ends up staying at a price that is fair for both sides. But the Warriors deal, Kuminga needs to prove a lot, or the Warriors would have to give up more picks in a deal, in my opinion, for that to make total sense on both sides. The Houston side of it is intriguing as well. You mentioned how with them, you know, they're a team that's young right now. They probably want to see things through, follow the OKC plan. You could argue, despite OKC getting Hartenstein this summer, getting Alex Caruso, that maybe they should have went a bit more all in last year than they did for Gordon Hayward. Now they have Chet Holmgren, who's out. Granted, they have advanced in the NBA Cup. They're 11-3 in the last month. They're still an outstanding team, and Chet hopefully could come back. But they did bypass a chance last year to go completely all in. Houston could look at what OKC did and say, well, maybe we win another series if we do go all in. Now, with Houston, there's a couple of different ways that they could get to the number required for Jimmy Butler. And it's important to remember, Butler is making $48 million this season. So it's very, very difficult to make a deal for a guy making that much money in the middle of the season. But with Houston, they have Fred VanVleet, who makes over $40 million, who is on a short-term contract. You could, in theory, include him, but VanVleet is also pretty important to the identity of this Houston team.
Yeah, exactly.
He's huge. He's part of their culture. He's part of what's building this up, a link between Ime Udoka and that younger roster. But the other side of it is you could also put in, say, Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks makes $22 million. He also is part of the identity of this team as well, but he's Dylan Brooks. He's not a shot creator. Jimmy Butler is a far better player than him. You could get there with Dylan Brooks, Jock Landale, and a young guy like Reed Shepard, or you could do Brooks with Steven Adams and Jayshon Tate, then a bunch of draft picks. So that, I think that last path that I mentioned, Brooks, Adams, Tate, plus picks, if I do any deal, if I'm the Rockets, for Jimmy Butler, to me, that's the one that I would want to do most. Not the one involving VanVleet. I don't know if you have enough shot making. Reed Shepard has not proven enough to suddenly jump into that role. I don't like the idea of giving up one of those young guys either. I don't want to give up Reed Shepard. I don't want to give up Jabari Smith. I'm definitely not giving up Amen Thompson for 35-year-old Jimmy Butler, who's about to sign a big deal. To me, giving up those picks, these mystery box players that may or may never turn into something in the future, that's the path I'd go if I'm Houston. But even then, I'm not totally certain about it.
So what's fascinating about this, Kevin, is that they have such a surplus of wing defenders, Houston does, that even if you give up Dylan Brooks, you still got Tari, you still got Amen Thompson, and you're still able to kind of make up the difference. You're going to get a big gain in Jimmy Butler, who, by the way, excellent defender when you need him to be. And so if you give up a wing Doberman like Amen Thompson, Tari Eason, or Dylan Brooks, you've got enough to make up the difference there. And I think for the Miami Heat perspective, they'd love to get Jabari. They'd love to get Reed Shepard. I don't think Houston's going to be willing to give up that kind of player, especially when you're talking about Jimmy Butler, who, yeah, he can make some sort of hints that he'll sign and re-sign with the Houston Rockets, but that's a risk. You give up one of your core guys, your building blocks, for maybe a half season of Jimmy Butler. It could be a half season rental. So I think from Houston, they're going to try to do this deal potentially without one of those core guys. I just don't see the Miami Heat biting. I think more likely, like you said, it's going to be a Warriors package. And I think the Miami Heat have a lot of, you know, soul searching to do about Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo. What's your ceiling right now? Are you a title contender? Because if you are, maybe Kuminga doesn't make much sense, right? They've got Jovic as their kind of like project there at the four. Does Kuminga make much sense taking the place of Nikola Jovic, who was starting in the postseason last year. They have a need. Is Kuminga going to solve that need? I think Memphis is interesting, but again, you're going to have to trade away Marcus Smart in something like that. I think it's kind of a useless transaction there. You're giving up a lot of your core to make that happen. For me, it's Golden State all the way. And I think what you saw in the clutch, Jimmy Butler in the playoffs is one of the most clutch players of anybody in the last like 5 years. What he did against Boston, what he's done in the postseason, he ranks eighth in clutch effective field goal percentage among high usage guys in the postseason the last 6 years with the Miami Heat. He is playoff Jimmy. And I think the Golden State Warriors, I think they should put their chips in the middle to get a guy like that.
I think the Warriors should go for Jimmy Butler. Of some of those other teams you mentioned in passing just now, the Grizzlies, if you're thinking about other teams for Jimmy Butler, because if you're the Heat, yes, Jimmy Butler might prefer those other teams, but if you're the Heat, well, what do we prefer? Like, what do we want? So you got to be looking around the NBA as well. You mentioned the Grizzlies in your conversation on the big number with Dan Devine. They were brought up. I don't think Jimmy Butler is a Grizzlies guy. I think there'd be too much overlap with Ja Morant with the up and down 3-point shooting. I think spacing could become problematic there. They went for Mikal Bridges. They went for OG Anunoby. They were willing to put a lot of picks on the table for those guys, but they were also younger players under 30 years old. I just can't imagine Jimmy Butler. The team that was interesting in your conversation with Dan, I thought was Cleveland, because with Cleveland, they're a team that is going for it. They have taken some lumps in the postseason, and they certainly have a need for another guy at the wing position. Now, the challenge for Cleveland is the fact that, well, what salaries are you going to give up? I don't think you're giving up Jared Allen. You're definitely not giving up Donovan Mitchell. I don't think you're giving up Darius Garland either. So that means you're trying to get there with like Caris LeVert and Max Strus and Isaac Okoro and Niang. And that's 4-for-1. And that becomes even more difficult to do during the regular season because of the roster spot limits. But maybe there's something there. But then again, what else are you giving up that makes it worth it for Miami? You've already given up a ton of your future picks. So what are you giving up that really makes sense there for Miami? One distant first round pick? I just don't think there's anything there. To me, when I'm thinking about Butler deals, aside from the names mentioned, the three teams come to mind. Philly, just Paul George for Jimmy Butler. Because Miami can stay competitive with Paul George. Joel Embiid gets his man, Jimmy Butler reunion back in Philly. But even then, I don't think it makes total sense for Miami because you don't want to sign Jimmy Butler long-term. That's why this is all starting here. The Heat don't want to give Jimmy Butler a long-term contract. So why would you want to give one to Paul George, who's just starting his big deal? The other one is the Lakers. The Lakers, they have those future picks of high value. They have short-term contracts that they could give up to the Heat so the Heat could have some salary relief and become free agent players in the coming years, and high value distant future picks. Lakers are mentioned in every single type of trade for a star though, so they're boring when it comes to these conversations. To me, the team nobody's talking about is the Denver Nuggets. Denver Nuggets, Tom. The Denver Nuggets could be a team that makes sense for Jimmy Butler because they need more shot creation alongside Jokic. Their offensive rating plummets to 94 in the minutes Jokic is not on the floor. They need somebody else who can do that. So how do you make it happen for Jimmy Butler? You could do it with Michael Porter Jr. and salary filler, Zeke Nagy, Dario Saric. You could give up one of your final future picks in order to make it happen as a sweetener for a deal. I don't think it is the best possible deal that Miami would hope for Jimmy Butler. But at the same time, can you really do better than 6'10" Klay Thompson? What could Spo do with Michael Porter Jr. seeing the success that he's had with guys like Duncan Robinson and Max Strus? To me, I think in Miami, you would see by far the best version of Michael Porter Jr. that you've ever seen. So I do think if you look at all the deals that get offered for Jimmy Butler, that construct could actually be at the top with what's best for Miami. And for Denver, Jimmy Butler, everything works with Jokic. Yes, you'd lose some shooting. Jamal Murray can do more spot up off ball stuff, but after losing Michael Porter Jr., so Murray could take more of that role, but Butler would add something that they're missing with that creation and downhill attacking and playmaking. And the two-man stuff with Jokic would be beautiful, just like it is for with everybody else.
So, Kev, I think for Jimmy Butler going to Denver, it would give Jokic, if, let's say, Jimmy Butler makes an All-Star or All-NBA, it would be the first player that Jokic has played with who has made an All-Star or an All-NBA or All-Defense while playing with Jokic.
Crazy.
That's the kind of supporting cast that he's had in Denver. It's the only, I've written about this at TomTheFinder.com, how it's basically the only MVP through 9-10 seasons in their career, only MVP to have never played with a guy to be named on any of those teams. And so that's what we're talking about here with Jokic, is he's so good and they've already won a championship, but they've never had a co-pilot next to Jokic, the caliber of Jimmy Butler. And this is an opportunity to do that. However, as you said, there's some issues. Just who are you going to give up in that trade? Are you going to give up the only really good three-point shooter on your team? They're already last in three-pointers made, and they're going to basically be a two-point team playing in 1992. And so that's
the
question. It can
work with Joker. That's like Jokic makes it work with everybody. It's working with Russ. LeBron couldn't make it work with Russ. The Clippers couldn't make it work with Russ. Jokic so far is. Playoffs, different story. We'll see. But Jokic makes it work with everybody. It doesn't matter what you do.
Right, right. So they can make this happen. It would just be such a stylistically different team than everybody else in the league, and that might be a good thing. So that's the first thing that comes to mind is, A, what he's never had an all-star next to him, which is crazy. I mean, Aaron Gordon, Jamal Murray, good players, not all-stars. And B, just the three-point stuff, it doesn't solve that issue, probably exacerbates that, but I think Jimmy Butler's a much better player than Michael Porter Jr. The Lakers, it is that interesting that the Lakers weren't named as one of the destinations for Jimmy Butler, just because of the fact that I guess it's not on the list, however real that list is, but the Lakers have such a need, and they're the Lakers, that you would imagine that throwing them into the mix would generate a lot more talks or generate a lot more interest in Jimmy Butler if you put that onto the table. But to me, it's Warriors. Then I can talk myself into the Houston Rockets, but it doesn't seem like they're anxious to make a deal. But Denver, outside of the three-point stuff, I think that'd be a great fit.
I agree. I the Denver fit gets me excited. I think there'd be some challenges with the shooting side of things, but they're already last. They're already 30th. Already. And to me, like the biggest concern with that team is those 10, 12 minutes that you don't have Jokic on the floor, where you're just getting slaughtered. And Butler would help a lot there in those minutes playing alongside Jamal Murray. Defensively, he would help on that team as well. He's an upgrade from Michael Porter Jr. on the defensive end. As he's still, look, Jimmy Butler is not in his prime on defense, but he's still really, really disruptive. And so to me, that's the type of trade that I'd be looking if I'm the Nuggets. And plus, the other side of it for Denver, something else to think about, they become a repeater team next season. And so it might be inevitable that Denver has to move off of somebody pricey. And Michael Porter Jr. is the guy that seems to make most sense as somebody to move if they decide we can't be a repeater team or we don't want to be a repeater tax team. So I think for them, for Denver, maybe Jimmy Butler is viewed even more as a rental, a 1 or 2 year rental player pursuing a championship to get out of that repeater tax.
The Kawhi?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So for Denver, just another thought there about optimizing this season, this year, and then you cut your cash. And that would piss off all the fans and everything like that. But just a thought from the Denver side of things. We're going to take a quick break and we're back. We're going to talk about Butler's agent, Bernie Lee, shredding Shams Charania's report and some other news. Okay, Tom, Bernie Lee, Jimmy Butler's agent, just completely shredded Shams Charania with his reporting. He posted on X, "If you don't stop putting my name on your complete and utter made-up bullshit because you normally aren't worth my time to acknowledge, I don't know what I'm going to do because I'm a middle-aged dad." But just know, it would indicate severe dislike. World, all of this is fabricated. I have never... And honestly, it wouldn't help me or the position I represent to do anything that's been reported by said journalist. Shams, This is your opportunity to say, my bad, I let ChatGPT write my tweets and it went old school Peter Vesey. Hey Shams, Peter was a writer in the 90s. Be a trendsetter. Invent the new I Was Hacked. Carry on, y'all. Thank you. So that's the entire quote
from Bernie Lee. For those listening at home, that was not Kev like going on a rant and doing this off the top of his head. That was a literal quote from Bernie Lee. Yes.
A literal quote from an NBA agent. All of it. Every word.
On the record, not even leaked to a reporter or said to somebody that will get on the... He said that on X, making sure it was out there. All the Peter Vesey, the world, the middle-aged dad, all of that was in there. just want to put make sure people were thinking you were just riffing.
And by the way, not the first time Bernie Lee has gone on Shams. Mm-hmm. Back in 2021, Shams reported that Jimmy Butler had some testy moments behind the scenes with the Heat coaching staff, and at the time, Bernie Lee tweeted, "Shut the F up, you clickbait, ambulance-chasing, dirtbag piece of shh. No one has told you this because this is not reality. Go find someone's assistant to text about an MRI or some other human calamity you want to be first on. We are good over here." So Bernie Lee and Shams Charania have a history. Now, I side with Shams here because I've also heard Jimmy Butler rumblings. There's rumblings about Jimmy Butler at the time he didn't sign the contract this summer. There's been rumblings in recent weeks about what are the Heat going to do. They've turned it around recently. They've won 7 out of 10. Tyler Hero's on an ascent. Bam Adebayo has been better recently. Jimmy Butler's still really good. I think Jimmy Butler would love to stay in Miami, but from what I've heard, Windhorst also said this on Thursday on ESPN, the Heat don't want to sign Jimmy Butler long term. They don't want to give him the money that Butler's camp thinks he deserves. So obviously Bernie Lee, like any agent, is just, you know, looking around, talking to people, seeing what's going to be up there for his superstar client with the last big contract of his career. Where Bernie Lee's pissed off is that this, by putting his name in there, it implies tampering. And that's where I think Bernie Lee's pissed off and he's trying to cover his ass. But I have no doubts that Shams' reporting is accurate here. This is just two guys, especially on the Bernie Lee side, that don't like each other, going at each other. But boy, crazy drama. I can't believe he posted all of that.
And it got a community note on his tweet, Shams' tweet. I've never seen that before. A community note on a report.
Ridiculous. Well, why does community notes not... like they're everywhere in the political world. They're everywhere in tech, but they're not on sports yet. Like, there's not many sports community notes at all on X.
I mean, he's refuting that he was talking to other teams, or at least saying to other teams that, like, hey, he'd like to go to these places or these are destinations.
Yeah.
And all that doesn't seem all that inflammatory to me. Like, the idea that Jimmy Butler would like to go to certain title contenders doesn't seem to rise to the level of, like, I need to go scorched earth on this report. It's not like Jimmy Butler's MFing, you know, the Miami Heat on this, or it doesn't seem like all that crazy. And yet here we have a prominent agent representing a prominent player in Jimmy Butler and just going at him publicly. So this is a huge story, and it gets back to, you know, why do players have agents? A lot of it is to make sure that these sort of stories get crafted or spun or made sure that your client's interests are in mind when a top reporter like Shams Charania goes public with a report. Joel Embiid doesn't have an agent. And you see the Tyrese Maxey quote come out about what happened in the locker room. And you're like, how does that something like that get out? And it just reinforces the fact that Joel Embiid, to my knowledge, is the only NBA player without an agent, or at least listed with an agent. And yes, he has people that works on his behalf in some of these circles. But it does get to the point of, like, how does stuff like this get out? Well, a lot of it is the power of agents and the power of agencies and the clientele list. And Shams Charania being the top newsbreaker in the industry, if he's got information and he's going public with it, probably he goes and tries to figure out, all right, who are the agents involved? Who are the teams involved? And if Shams is going public with this, I'm pretty sure he has some knowledge that Bernie Lee or some way that there was a conversation had. I think it was in league circle. So who was it with? We're not really sure. But This is a vendetta between Bernie Lee and Shams Charania. And rarely do we see this go public. And it just speaks to how sensitive the situation is. I do think the Miami Heat, they like to keep things very close to the vest. If you've been around the league, you know the Miami Heat are a very small front office, very small organization, and they keep things locked tight typically. So when something like this gets out, it also is a very rare moment. So it's a rare crack in that foundation, which is why I think in part you see Bernie coming out very strongly here.
Definitely. And ultimately, you don't want to piss off the team that you're playing for because they might be your only option. It might be at the end of the day. Nobody might trade for him. The Heat might not find a deal they like. You want to make sure that you still have leverage there. And plus, Miami is where he wanted to be. I believe it's still where he wants to be if they give him the deal that he ends up.
Kev, they went on a 3-game win streak right before the report came out. Miami Heat are really good right now. And yeah, so the idea, they just beat the Cavs. They beat the Suns and they just blasted the Lakers and created an entire media circus after blowing out the Lakers in Miami. That's the sort of caliber of team we're talking here. And so for them to, you know, trade Jimmy Butler at this point, I mean, like you said, they might be like, dude, let's play out the season, see where we go. The Eastern Conference is open. Let's see what we can do here. And maybe they upgrade around Jimmy Butler. But I do think that, like, the timing of this with the showcase coming up in Orlando next week and the trade restrictions coming up, it makes some sense why this gets out now. But man, this is a highly, highly flammable situation, it seems.
It absolutely is. Let's talk about two teams that were involved in this whole Butler situation that played in the NBA Cup on Wednesday night. The Rockets beat the Warriors 91-90. It was a very, very exciting game. Great down the stretch. Then there was a foul call in the final closing moments that infuriated Steve Kerr. He said after the game, "I'm pissed off. We wanted to win this cup. We aren't going to because of a loose ball foul 80 feet from the basket with the game on the line. I've never seen anything like it in my life. And this is absolutely ridiculous." I thought it was a crappy foul call as well. I posted about it. I said how are you going to call this? It's a loose ball at the end of the game. It doesn't make any sense how Kuminga gets called. He's going for the ball. I thought it was ridiculous that Bill Kennedy blew the whistle there. I thought it was a completely soft foul call after a hard fought early 2000 style defensive battle. It was fun. I loved watching it. And then you blow the whistle on that. Two competitors going on the floor for the ball. Let them go. Like, what are you doing? Annoyed me. And I mean, I know people like respond, oh, you're defending the Warriors, all the calls they've gotten over the years. I don't care about the past. We're talking about today, this single game. And it pissed me off.
It was not Billy Kennedy's finest moment. And it actually, in my opinion, wasn't his finest game either. When you look at the clips that we saw on the broadcast, Steph Curry got fouled on a three-pointer very clearly, and it should have been a four-point play in the first quarter, and it was right in front of Billy Kennedy, and he's running back on defense. Like, what? And the whole, I think Trace Jackson Davis was like, what are you watching out there? And the cameras caught Billy Kennedy being like, yep, I missed that. I'm sorry, Steph, essentially. And he's putting his hand over his heart being like, I'm sorry, I missed that one. My bad. And I like the honesty there, the transparency, but then it happened in the fourth quarter again where Aaron Holiday clearly hit Steph Curry's wrist on an air ball jump shot, a two-pointer, and it was a wild shot, and Steve Kerr was right in front of him. You're like, you just missed that call in the first quarter. It was clearly on Stephen Curry, clearly a foul on Stephen Curry's arm, and then he missed it again, and then the Billy Kennedy call at the end was egregious. Because 2 seconds earlier, Gary Payton in second has the ball and Fred VanVleet just falls on top of him. Same exact thing. And he doesn't call that, but he waits to call that one when everybody's calling a timeout. In both situations, so Steve Kerr was calling a timeout when GP2 had it. And then the Houston Rockets, as soon as Jalen Green got the ball, they were calling a timeout. Instead of calling a timeout, you call a foul. And like Steve Kerr said, you send him to the line, let the players decide it. I wouldn't have a problem if they were calling a tight game the whole time and then they called that foul. Kev, what players, coaches, and executives want is consistency. And what we're seeing is inconsistent refereeing by the officials. You're going to basically let a brawl happen for the entire game and then you're going to call that foul at the end. It is not consistent. And I do think you know, we're talking about a league that last year, you and I both wrote about that, the fact that the NBA, the referees just stopped calling the same fouls halfway through the season. They swallowed their whistle on a lot of the same calls that were happening in the first half of the season. Then they stopped calling them, and a reduction about 20% in foul calls. And by the end of the season, they were like, yep, we decided we wanted more physicality. This stuff is aggravating to fans. They don't know, you know, what time it is. You know, why, what coaches and executives and players want is just consistency. And in the first couple weeks of the season in October, there are 50 free throw attempts per game. In last night's game, 50 free throw attempts per game on average in the opening month of the season. And in these knockout games, okay, we saw the New York Knicks, between the New York Knicks and Hawks, they had 35 free throw attempts. Dallas OKC, they had 26 free throw attempts. And in Houston Golden State, they both would have been single digit free throw attempts had it not been for that Jalen Green foul call on the ground. They had 19 combined free throw attempts in that game. So the knockout games have had an average of 34 free throw attempts per 100. And in the opening month of the season, it was at 50. I'm talking consistency. Yes, it might be a small sample size of just a few games here. We're talking about the knockout games. But what we're seeing is within the game, a lack of consistency on what's a foul and what's not. And that's why Steve Kerr, I think, was so aggravated, is because the whole game, both teams knew this is going to be a super physical game. It's going to be prison ball. Both sides were angry that foul calls weren't being made. And then you call that one, the one that Steve Kerr said he hasn't seen since, you know, elementary school being called. The consistency is an issue. And if you're going to swallow the whistle during knockout games, you can't call that on Kuminga. You just can't. It can't happen.
It's unforgivable. And you know what? The next time Bill Kennedy makes a foul call and he looks into the camera, he's going to get praised. Oh, he's so outgoing. He's such a great personality. These referees, I don't want to see their faces. I don't want to know their names. That's when they're doing their best job, is when they are anonymous.
I love Billy Kennedy when he's on the screen. He's
I don't think we should have them on camera.
Fair.
That's my feeling. I think it inflates ego. We talk about referees wanting camera time, making it about themselves. So why do we make it about them with a camera right in their face? Why? He just got praised a minute prior. Everybody posting about it on social media. Oh, I love Billy Kennedy. He's so great. He stinks. He stunk at the end of that game.
Yeah.
It's about the calls you make, not your personality. Yes, he's probably an awesome guy. He's definitely funny and outgoing. He's definitely got a personality, but that's not what refereeing is about. It's about making the right calls. And like you said, Tom, you nailed it. People want consistency. And so all the talk is about how, you know, in certain circles, TV ratings are down. Why are there highs for other leagues happening right now, for MLB, for NFL, but NBA is way down. NBA Cup ratings are down. Regular season ratings are down. It's because of the inconsistency with officiating. It's because end of games take 20 minutes to complete.
Oh, wow.
Like the Magic Bucks game on Tuesday took 20 minutes to complete the final 2 minutes. A few weeks ago, I tweeted how the Celtics and Cavs game, the last 34 seconds, took 17 minutes of real time to complete. It's because it's how the end of games drag. It's inconsistency with officiating. It's the three-point shooting as well. It's so many different factors that go into it with why people are opting to watch the 10-minute recap on YouTube instead of watching full games, or just scrolling TikTok and Instagram Reels to see the highlights. That's why.
Kev, the game was awesome. The game was
awesome. It was amazing. It was an awesome game. But it's the ending that people say, yeah, maybe I just won't watch the next one.
The replay reviews, trying to get the calls right. Nate Jones talks about this a lot on X, where he's like, man, the way that you suck the energy out of these late game situations that are the most exciting. You know, growing up, the old adage about the NBA was, I'm not watching until the fourth quarter. I don't care until the last 5 minutes of the game. And they've stripped that. A lot of that excitement and energy in those closing seconds are a bunch of people standing around looking at a monitor.
Exactly. For 20 minutes.
For 20 minutes. So I think...
When we can see the call the first time through sometimes. You see the replay once, boom, it's done. The NBA, like, we have artificial intelligence. We have Bernie Lee saying Shyam Charania uses ChatGPT. Is there some AI program that the NBA can use to make this go quicker? Like, what's taking so long on some of these? Like, come on. What are we doing?
Is your mic okay?
I'm just getting too excited over here. For people who are listening, not watching, my mic just spun around because I hit it by accident. I'm just moving.
We're fired up. Look, Kev, the NBA does have Hawkeye technology that is like VAR, that they are hoping to have a lot more referee calls and a lot more things automated using player tracking cameras and taking some of these calls away from the officials that are 50-50 calls. Let them do the more subjective stuff. And then the more objective, is that goaltending? Was that a 5-second call? Was that defensive 3 seconds, three in the key? Was that out of bounds? These sort of things that we spend a lot of time with replay reviews or discussions or controversies. Hopefully that down the road gets stripped from the game and we can just focus on the basketball, because the basketball was awesome. The basketball was so good. And I think the defense by both teams, Draymond Green on Alperen Şengün, the matchup there was awesome. The 3-point blocks that you saw in that game, also in the Hawks game, were, I mean, just Jalen Johnson, and when you got OG Anunoby and Dyson Daniels, it was an awesome, awesome night of basketball that was ruined by a lot of really weird refereeing at the end of those games. And I think, like, man, the basketball is great. We just got to focus on that and not the officials. I know we're part of this, is that we're spending a lot of time talking about the officiating. But you know what? Steve Kerr did too after the game. And it's just... it's not us. It's not the media that's creating this. This is the players, executives, and coaches that are like, man, this is a problem.
It's part of it. I mean, look, my friends who don't work in sports media text me about it. Like, everybody talks about it. It's fans who talk about it. It's coaches who talk about it. It's executives on a phone call yesterday talking to an exec. We're talking about it. This was before what happened in the Warriors-Rockets game. So it happens with everybody. Let's take a very quick break, and then we'll be back talking about the rest of the NBA Cup games. All right, Tom, so the Rockets will be facing off against the Thunder on Saturday. OKC beat the Mavericks 118-104 on Tuesday night. This was a really great game. SGA had 39 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. He was the best player on the floor by far, in part because Luka Doncic just got completely clamped up by Lu Dort. Luka had 16 points on 5 for 15 from the field. It was his worst game since he got back from his absence. He had 4 straight really good games, but OKC's defense, dude, I swear to God, like, they lose Chet. They're 11-3 since they lose Chet. They have the number 2 defensive rating over this last month without Chet. Best record in the West. And I felt like the way in which they defended Luka, if you watch one game of the 14 they've played, this shows why they've been so elite on defense. You have Lu Dort, who I think belongs on an all-defensive team so far this season, completely clamping up Luka with his size and strength. And then there's a play in the first half where finally Luka, sigh of relief. I don't have Lu Dort on me anymore. I have smaller Kayson Wallace, who's 50 pounds lighter, 5 pounds shorter than me. And then Wallace blocks his step back 3.
Who does
that? Luka gets the ball. Nobody. And then Luka gets the ball back, and Wallace just completely stays in front of him, bothers his floater layup attempt. And it's like they just have an endless line of these elite, gritty, tough, smart perimeter defenders. Caruso, Dort, Jalen Williams himself, even though he's a star scorer, it just keeps going on and on and on and on. They are amazing on defense. They are incredible.
Appointment viewing. Fans at home, you need to watch the Oklahoma City Thunder, because their defense is insane. Insane. Everything that NBA fans think the NBA is about, oh, they don't play defense, they don't play hard. They're all these coddled billionaires out there. Watch OKC play basketball, and you're going to sign up for League Pass. You're going to watch every NBA game they're involved in after you watch them. They are so amazing defensively. I called them a couple weeks ago on the big number. We talked about that they are tracking as the best defense ever, ever in the history of the NBA. That's how good they are. They're 9 points better than league average. And on pbpstats.com, you can see that since 2000, no defense has been that much better than average than this Oklahoma City Thunder team. And I think they're going to get better. That's the crazy thing. Chet Holmgren is not playing on this team. They got Isaiah Hartenstein, who comes in and seamlessly fills in after not playing with the team ever. And now they're still an elite, elite defense, which, I mean, historically, the Bill Russell Celtics, the Pistons in 04, you can't put any other team in this conversation with OKC and say they're legitimately better defense than this Oklahoma City Thunder squad. They are so good and they are so disciplined. I mean, they create, I think 19% of opponent possessions are ending in a turnover. Absurd. One out of every five possessions by a team is getting turned over by the Oklahoma City Thunder. They are tracking as the best defense of my lifetime. And certainly, I think, in the conversation for best defense ever. And once Chet Holmgren comes back and Isaiah Hartenstein, those two dudes could be on the floor for 48 minutes for OKC. It's over. I've already picked them as going to beat Boston in the finals if they match up. And everything that's happened this season so far at KOC, it makes me believe that they are the team to beat in the NBA because of that defense and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and J-Dub. It's just insane how good this team is.
I do think Celtics Thunder is where we're headed. I do. Especially if they get Chet back. If they don't get Chet back, they're more beatable in a playoff setting. I just think the line, I talked with Jason Timpf about this on my show earlier this week, and Jason made the point. He's like, okay, see, clearly the favorite with Chet, maybe second or third behind some other teams without Chet. And he's still very bullish on Denver. He still really likes the Dallas roster as well, and rightfully so. But even without Chet, like, we're seeing what this team can do. And I feel like they're trending up. They have so many young guys that continue to get better. Where is Jalen Williams in April? Where is Kayson Wallace at that point? These young guys are getting better. They're developed chemistry as a group. They're insane. And I think we talked about this a little bit earlier as well, Tom. Houston is kind of where OKC was last year, where it's like figuring out who we are and what we're missing, what we need. Those teams are going to face off on Saturday in Las Vegas in the semifinal. They're 1-1 against each other this season. OKC won the first one in November, 126-107. Houston won earlier this month, 119-116. You picked Dallas to win the NBA Cup. I picked the Bucks over Dallas, so both of our predictions for the final are wrong already. Who are you picking in this Thunder Rockets matchup on Saturday?
I mean, it's OKC. At this point, you know, I was kind of like, it was a coin flip, Dallas or OKC in that first round, and the winner of that might win this whole thing. It's why I didn't, you know, OKC right now is rolling. The Thunder, the way they play basketball on both ends, they're number one in turnover rate offensively, they're number one in turnover rate defensively. And when you look at the Houston Rockets, you know, you do have the second best defense in the NBA. You're going to have Dobermans going against Dobermans. It is going to be a brawl out there. And again, I just implore people who are not watching this live, like watching NBA games live, watch this game between Houston Rockets and Oklahoma City Thunder. And you're going to, if you're out on the NBA, you just listen to podcasts and you're just like watching YouTube highlights. Watch this game. It is going to be so refreshing for you to see how hard these two teams play, the athleticism that you see on a routine basis. And look, like the Hawks too, you said it, KOC, how exciting it is for these teams, the Bucks, the Hawks, the Rockets, the Thunder, to be on the stage in Vegas for the NBA Cup is great also because these young talents that we have in the league, Dyson Daniels, throw in that mix of Tari Eason and Amen Thompson and Kayson Wallace, Lou Dort, these absolute dogs out there. There is a lot of exciting young players in the league, and they're going to be showcased in the Cup this weekend.
Absolutely, 100% true. And I think the NBA, there probably are a segment of people like, oh, shucks, we don't get Steph. We don't get the Warriors. Oh, there's no LeBron to lean on. This is a good thing. Like the NBA needs to market teams with an identity, and all four of these teams in their own respective ways has some type of identity, especially the Thunder, especially the Rockets, especially the Bucks. The Hawks are still forming theirs, second year with Quinn Snyder, but that third quarter they had against the Knicks, they looked like they're developing a defensive identity in that third quarter against the Knicks on Wednesday night. 34-18 third quarter for Atlanta. just completely locking up Jalen Brunson, switching defense, Dyson Daniels, Reese Ishay, DeAndre Hunter. You even had Trae Young hustling and locking up. Like, the defense was amazing. Clint Capella was great in that game. Get Trae Young rolling the dice at the end of the game.
Yo, that
the
was awesome. Logo.
That was so cool. The Hawks and Trae, like, Trae's a fun player, and the Hawks are a fun team. So I'm excited about these four teams, and I hope, like, I posted this, and Rockets fans got pissed off at me. They're like, we're not a small market. Like, we're the fourth biggest market. No. What I mean is the way the NBA markets these teams. Like, the Rockets are marketed as a smaller franchise. They're not thrown on national TV all the time. They're not the most popular team in the entire country. They're marketed like a smaller market team,
yep.
Even though the city of Houston's a big market technically. Same thing with Atlanta. They're not thrown on national TV all the time. OKC, they don't have a national TV game until late January, which is ridiculous. Outside of the NBA Cup, it's insane. They're the best team in the West. How are they not on national TV? And don't tell me NBA TV counts.
They're so fun to watch. They're so. I remember texting somebody last year, like early in the season, might have been 2 years ago. They're like my favorite team to watch in the NBA. This was before they took off, and I'm like, the way how smart they are, how sophisticated their sets are, the way that they play basketball on both ends of the floor. That's what basketball like. Should be played, in my opinion, is just everyone, the chemistry, the decision making, the moving without the ball, all of that stuff. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a super duper star in the league. I just love watching them play basketball, and they need to be on national TV all the time.
Got to flex them in. Got to find a way to flex them onto national TV more often in January.
Who are the Hawks? I get paid to like tell you what the Hawks are, and I don't know what their point differential suggests that they're a bottom 10 team in the NBA. They've gone 0-6 against the Wizards, Pistons, Bulls, and Blazers this season. 0-6.
And then look at their wins. And then tell me about their wins.
6-1 against the Celtics, Cavs, Bucks, and Knicks. The top Crazy. Four teams in the East, they are 6-1. The Cavs are 0-2 against the Hawks and 21-2 against everybody else. The Wizards are 2-0 against the Hawks and 1-19 against everybody else. The Hawks are an enigma wrapped in a mystery, wrapped in an enigma. Like, I don't know what to make of this team, but when they're going, man, they're as exciting as any of those defenses we talked about earlier. Jalen Johnson, the way that he is able to stunt a pick and roll, put his leg in the paint, and then go as soon as Mikal Bridges kicks out to OG Anunoby, Jalen Johnson goes and runs to the three-point corner and blocks OG Anunoby's shot while walling off the paint. There's like three NBA players who can pull off that move, and the Hawks have two of them, and Dyson Daniels and Jalen Johnson. Dyson Daniels has 152 deflections to his name this season. No other player has more than 100, okay? Dyson Daniels, 152 deflections. That's more than Drew Holiday, Jaylen Brown, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Ja Morant, Kevin Durant combined. Those five players I just named have fewer deflections combined than Dyson Daniels, who has 152. And those five players have 130 to their name. You put Crazy. Drew Holiday, Jaylen Brown, Derek White, Jason Tatum, those four Celtics combined have 158 deflections to their name, and Dyson Daniels has 152. The way that he locked up Jalen Brunson, who went two quarters, basically, 23 minutes without scoring in that game, that third quarter you mentioned, Jalen Brunson scored halfway through the second quarter and didn't score again until halfway through the fourth quarter. A lot of that was Dyson Daniels, the activity that he had. He only had, I think, a couple blocks in this one, but a bunch of deflections. And I just think Dyson Daniels is must-see TV. And again, if you complain about no defense being played in the NBA, I don't know what to tell you. You got to watch these guys play. And they are electrifying defensively. When Jalen Johnson and Dyson Daniels play like that, it's awesome.
And it's a great matchup against the Milwaukee Bucks. They're going to have to stop Chris Middleton, Damian Lillard, and of course, Giannis Antetokounmpo, nobody really has an answer for them. But the Hawks did beat the Bucks earlier this season. They won 119-104. Bucks had a good game against the Magic earlier in the week. Credit to the Magic for sticking around. They lost by only 5, 114-109. No Franz Wagner, no Paolo Banchero. Jalen Suggs had 32 points, carried a massive load. Looked like he was very emotional on the bench after they lost the game, after he put everything out there. Fun game, dude. Like, Suggs hitting big shots. Goga poster dunk on Giannis in the first half. Giannis got a revenge dunk in the second half. I was impressed by the Orlando sticking around in that game. Ultimately, Milwaukee takes it. I want to point out Chris Middleton real quick.
Yeah.
Chris Middleton had 0 points in the game. 0 points. But I came away feeling like, okay, this is why it's so important that he's back. He had 8 assists in the game. I think 5 of them went to Giannis, just creating easy shots for Giannis at the basket. The Chris Middleton X factor coming off the bench right now for the Bucks with their revised rotations, AJ Green over Pat Connaughton, Andre Jackson playing more often, Brook Lopez sitting when he needs to, playing when he needs to. Doc Rivers is pulling the right strings for this Bucks team. That's why I picked them to win the NBA Cup. I think they'll beat the Hawks. But Atlanta plays them really well, man, and they got those defenders. And they had a great game plan. Atlanta executed a game plan against the Knicks. And that's the difference between these NBA Cup games and normal regular season games. Coaches are preparing with a game plan, not just rolling the ball out there. We didn't even have time to practice. We flew yesterday. These teams are prepared with a game plan specifically for an opponent. So I'm very excited for Bucks-Hawks on Saturday as well.
Can Dyson Daniels do what he did to Jalen Brunson with Damian Lillard? Because Dyson Daniels, when he was guarding Jalen Brunson this season, Jalen Brunson's effective field goal percentage was 40. And everybody else that has to go against Jalen Brunson against the Atlanta Hawks, Jalen Brunson's going 62% effective field goal percentage. Like that to me, Dyson Daniels, yes, the deflections and stuff, it's going to be interesting to see how that works against Damian Lillard and the screens that they do with Giannis and the actions they have with Chris Middleton, who, by the way, right now, +9 with those three guys on the floor in about 30 minutes and change. It's 11 plus 11 net rating. It's going to stay there. It's going to stay there. If those three guys are healthy, they're going to be blowing teams out with those three on the floor. Rest assured, they're three studs. They work well together. They work well together last year. They just didn't play enough minutes. And if they're healthy and Chris Middleton moves into that starting lineup here soon, we're going to be hearing a lot about the Milwaukee Bucks and a lot of apologies to Doc Rivers.
What's your prediction, Hawks or Bucks?
I got Bucks in that one.
So you got Thunder over Bucks in the finals at this point?
Thunder over Bucks in the finals of the NBA Cup and in the NBA Finals against Boston. So I'm just sticking to it.
I'm going to stick with the Bucks winning the NBA Cup, though I was not anticipating the Thunder to advance. I had Dallas riding their hot streak, winning that one, knocking out the Thunder early. But I'll stick with the Bucks over the Thunder instead of the Mavs in my prediction for the NBA Cup. I can't wait. I'm having fun watching these games. They're competitive. It's intense. And for the most part, despite some poor calls, they're letting them play. And it's been fun to watch. Tom, hope you enjoy your weekend and enjoy the NBA Cup. And we'll be back together again next Friday with another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Tom, have a good one, man.
Thanks, Kev. Always excited, pumped, and jacked to be here.
Me as well, Tom. Thank you for listening to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We'll be back again on Tuesday with another episode talking about the NBA Cup results we saw over the weekend. Please subscribe to the Kevin O'Connor Show if you've not done so already. Thank you to Brett for producing, and thanks to you for listening. Have a good weekend.